Chapter 3. Terror, the Imperial Palace. The Great Chamber had been the institutional heart of Terror for as long as Terror had been the heart of an Imperium of Man. At capacity, it could hold 500,000 citizens. It was a Colosseum, a public arena of awesome scale, built to the grand demands of Unitarian dreams. The restoration work enacted in the aftermath of the Great Heresy had been largely sympathetic, cosmetic reimaginings of the occasional mural where a pict of the original could not be found or showed an inconvenient contradiction to the creed, notwithstanding. Vast tiers of empty seating surrounded a central dais. 12 large chairs were spaced evenly across its centre line, backed by the heraldic banners of the 12 great pillars of imperial government. A speaker's podium, raised by the spread wings of a golden aquila, glittered under the triangulated beams of focused lighting. The dais rotated almost imperceptibly, and a more potent metaphor for the pace of decision-making by said great pillars of imperial government, Vangarich could not imagine. The last vestige of representative and accountable governance stood at the far east end of the chamber, a statue of the great Rogal Dorn, raised in commemoration by his brother, the first Lord Gilliman. The Primarch watched the council of the day with an expression of infamous severity. Drakhan Vangarich was not a man given to idle dreams, but the thought of what a living, breathing Primarch would make of the small men trying to fill their superhuman boots gave him a little pleasure.
"Order, please," said Tobris Eckharth, master of the Administratum, reading tiredly from the data slate in his hands. His voice mumbled back to him on a time-delayed echo from the voxcaster set up around the vast auditorium. Small arms fired in the distance, but not all that distant, broke up the carefully calibrated augmeter system with pernicious static.
"I'm sure that the situation is under control. I..."
He blinked myopically at a second data slate on the lectern in front of him, then bent to listen to some aid unseen behind the beam-bright podium lights and visibly pulled himself together.
"I've been made aware that the situation is well in hand. If you could all now please access your agenda packets, Cryptex Key, Kappa Tribus Septum Septum Omega, and once we're all here, we can begin."
Scattered around the swathes of empty seating, lesser lords and meme serfs, approved by the Administratum's increasingly stringent vetting lists, peeled the security tape off their packets and tapped in the Cryptex key. Vangarich did as everyone else did. As a man of medium height and medium build, dressed in black with oiled-back black hair like any aide or staffer present, he was adept at discouraging notice. His skin shared the pale tone of the trillions who lived their lives on lightless terror, his few features of note being his dark, wide-set eyes and a tiny scar that bridged the lower part of his face between jaw and chin. He had, of course, memorized the contents of an unredacted version of the package, and his agents had furnished him with a cryptex key to the final document as soon as it had been disseminated amongst the High 12. It had been 100 years since a Grand Master of the Officio Assassinorum had been seated amongst that number, but one grew accustomed to certain privileges of access, particularly if one possessed the means to retain them. Indeed, Vangarich considered it the patriotic duty of his office to keep his finger, as the saying went, on the Senatorum's pulse. Scanning the 97-page abstract, he flagged up the most glaring omissions from the original agenda. It was always an amusing mental exercise to attempt to deduce who was responsible for removing what. A complaint from the Admiralty on the costs imposed on them by the transfer of the blockade from the last wall to the Navy. Fabricator General Kubik. Too easy. The Fabricator General would accept any cost to get his mechadendrites on the Orcs' technologies, particularly if it could be loaded onto another. A demand for civilian evacuation of the Cathedral World Madriline? Lansung. Why discuss what you no longer have the ships in range to deliver?
A motion to restrict Chapter Master Corlan's disruptive access to naval facilities and, reading between the lines, the Lucifer Blacks? It had the patrician fingers of the Paternoval envoy all over it. Smiling archly, he skimmed ahead. The only downside was that Helad Gibran no longer owed him a favour. He held the page and frowned in thought. Here was an interesting omission. A report of mass starvations in Albia Hive. Basic provisioning was the duty of the administratum, but he didn't think that Eckarth had the spine for this kind of backroom politicking. Joskina Tull of the Chartist Captains, perhaps. He glanced up to the dais. Joskina Tull looked waxen under the podium lights, haunted by an enfolding horror that was so much worse from the other side of her glassy stare. Host to a magnificent gown of tented lace and emeralds, she had barely moved in half an hour. Just a telling blink of the eyes whenever the screams became loud enough, near enough, to escape the weapons fire. She wasn't hearing screams. She was hearing cries for blood. No, definitely not Tull. The other lords were still working their way to their seats. Gibran, Paternoval envoy of the Navigators, and Sark, the otherworldly master of the Astronomicon, were ushered into their allotted seats by plush-liveried senatorum staff. Spread in his chair at the opposite end of the dais, Anwar of the Adeptus Astra Telepathica watched his fellow abhumans with a deep, probing gaze. The uncanny walked down Vangarich's spine with fingers of ice. Seated beside the Imperium's most powerful sanctioned psyker in full Astra Militarum dress uniform, the Lord Militant, Abel Veriolt, attempted to make small talk. A choir of cherubs and servo seraphim hovered around the carved Albion Oak podium doors. Beneath the dragonfly chur of hymnals, Ecclesiarch Mesring and Lord Admiral Lansung entered together. Lansung had lately taken to porting his great bulk around with the aid of a silver cane, but his physical deterioration was barely noticeable beside that of the Ecclesiarch. Mesring looked feral. His hair was wild. His surplice was unpressed and clearly the same that he had worn to the previous week's session. There were purpling wine stains in his beard. The two men were arguing heatedly about fleet deployments to the Tang sector, something that continued well after Senatorum aides had adroitly manoeuvred them to non-adjacent seats. Provost Colonel Chabal Sarria rolled her eyes as if despairing of the behaviour of children, checked her wrist chrono-augmetic, and continued pacing. Her superior in the Adeptus Arbites, Werner Zeck, had unilaterally absented himself from Senatorum business once civil disobedience had spilled into the Sanctum Imperialis, and had preferred not to return since. His deputy had no resort to such sanction, and knew it. So she paced back, clipped turn and forth, in front of Fabricator General Kubik. The representative of Mars was almost as still as his counterpart from the merchant fleets, mechadendrites tapping on his chair's arm interface in binarized counterpoint to the provost colonel's steps. Eckarth's timid appeal for order earned him a sharp look from Udin MacDudo. The Lord Commander of the Imperium, Commander-in-Chief of its incalculable assets of war and peace, simmered lamely in his grand throne. The slow pinkening of his face was accentuated by his shaved head, and the way the darkening turned the old scar that crossed the left side of his face and neck and through his milky eye, an almost luminescent white. Though separate from and above any single military arm of the Imperium, he wore the starched white Grand Admiral's uniform of his previous career in the Navy. It practically burst with medals and overcompensation. It was pathetic. Only the inquisitorial representative was still absent.
"I suppose we could always just execute them all," suggested the woman seated at Vangarich's right.
"A little extreme, perhaps," a passing thought temporarily brightened his mind. "But tempting."
Commandant Ursula Cage of the Scholar Progenium was a striking woman. As the joint senior commissar, she was a feared individual. The utilitarian lines of one of Terra's ancient noble houses shaped her face. Her hair was the shade and texture of gunmetal. She sat forwards, barely on her seat at all. Summary justice in potentia.
Name me one who doesn't deserve it.
Veriolt means well.
With a short, hard laugh, Cage reached inside her greatcoat's breast pocket and handed him a data slate. It was a high-level briefing document with an Astra Militarum confidential stamp emblazoned across each page. The kind that were intercepted, copied, and subtly rerouted to Vangarich's desk about 10,000 times each day. He seldom read them personally. He made an exception for this one. It was the usual bad news, worlds lost or suddenly unresponsive, presumed so, but there were bright spots if one looked hard enough. Some dogged defending of an ice world called Valhalla had checked one front of the Orcs' push into the Ultima Segmentum, and a small force of Ultramarines had successfully disabled an attack moon in orbit of Kalth. Added to the one brought down by Admiral Landstrom at Port Sanctus, and another by a combined force of Blood Angels and Nova Marines, that made three confirmed kills. Three. In a galaxy-wide incursion. No wonder they were losing. He didn't need another classified internal document to tell him that.
The Orcs are getting sophisticated,
murmured Cage.
Their choice of targets suggests a network of supply lines, resource processing centers, and communication hubs that we've not seen before.
She smiled coldly.
Or so the Progenium Tacticae tells us.
This wasn't in the unredacted agenda packet.
She cocked an eyebrow.
Everyone knows Orcs can appear intelligent in battle. I know. But in war.
She shook her head.
The Lord Militant would have been laughed out of the Senatorum.
Vangarich glanced over his shoulder as a squad of Lucifer Blacks in enameled black carapace powered up their shock glaives and ran for the main doors. They were wearing yellow armbands. Vangarich had never seen anything like that in the regiment before. He filed a mental note to look into it.
Why are you showing this to me?
He asked. The Lucifer Blacks thumped through the transport-sized oak doors. Suddenly, the sound of bolter fire was very close indeed.
Operational freedom, said Cage. I have a certain amount of leeway. There are progenium schools in the Orc's path, Tempestus regiments that the Lord Militant doesn't know about. But you?
I'm willing to bet you have agents in the area so deep, even they don't know who they are.
This reputation of mine will get me into trouble one day.
I was told you had a sense of humour, Grandmaster, one of many things I disapprove of.
And who told you such a thing?
Venand.
You've spoken to Venand?
She ignored his question.
We can't beat the Orcs without them.
She nodded towards the lords on the dais.
But with organisations like ours, we can slow them down.
Leave it with me,
Vangarich murmured, non-committal, passing the slate back to the aide sitting in the pew immediately behind him. Then, along with several hundred others in a hall built for 500,000, he turned towards the sudden acrimony spilling from the dais. Udo was rising, pulling the creases from his uniform in a clink of brass, and then glaring milkily from his throne. The inquisitorial representative had arrived. Both of them. Lastan Nimagium Veritas walked up to the dais with a clunking, power-armoured stride. His antique battle plate was white, filigreed with theurgic symbols and possessed of its own wanton animus by fluttering papyrus scraps. The man himself was shrunken and pallid, his armour's gorget seals sucked and wheezed about his throat like a ventilator. At his shoulder, walking briskly and without augmentation, came a woman with short, pale grey hair and a face far younger than her eyes. Vangarich had never considered her appearance to be anything other than ordinary until just then, and the kick of his emotional rebuke surprised him.
Venand, he breathed.
Udin MacDudo puffed out his medals.
The names of all senatorum aides are to be pre-submitted to the administratum for approval. Lips curled back, he turned his dead eye onto Eckarth, who quickly blathered his agreement. Inquisitor Veland will have to leave.
She is not my aide,
said Veritas, his voice like sand.
She is the inquisitorial representative.
Not any more, Veritas. You are.
Until the Inquisition decides otherwise, said Veland smoothly.
Veritas had an undeniable gravitas, an automatic authority brought on by age and ceramite. But Veland spoke with a reasoned clarity that the senatorium had been missing for too long.
And now it has been decided that Laston and I both will best represent our organization at this time.
Outrageous! Spat Mesring, jumping from his chair like a feral cat. This is a grab for power.
Agreed,
came Kubik's unsubtle vocalization. Venan spread her hands peaceably.
The Inquisition still has one vote on this council.
But two voices,
whispered Anwar silkily.
United, said Veritas, as it is time we all were.
The provost colonel was speaking urgently into a vox pin in her cuff. Lansung appeared to be nodding slowly in agreement. A hush had fallen over the auditorium, all eyes on Udin MacDudo, as the Lord Gilliman turned and strode stiff-backed from the podium.
Well, sir, said Beast Cruel, pushing his thick arms over Vangarich's seat back and secreting the commissar's data slate into one of several concealed pockets. I'd say that makes things interesting.